Since learning the truth about alcohol over 4 years ago, I've become pretty skeptical about anything that seems too good to be true. You know, like alcohol. If you're like me and you can spot a too good to be true health hack from a mile away, congrats, you're a skeptic too. Ritual knows that every good skeptic deserves a multivitamin that exceeds our standards. I take Ritual's Essential for Women 18 Plus every morning because it has high quality and traceable key ingredients in clean, bioavailable forms. It's gentle on an empty stomach and has a minty essence in every bottle that helps make taking my multis actually enjoyable. No more shady business. Ritual's Essential for Women 18 Plus is a multivitamin you can actually trust. Get 25% off your first month at ritual.com/sobermom. Start Ritual or add Essential for Women 18 Plus to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/sobermom for 25% off. All right, you guys, I am currently struggling with a pinched nerve in my neck, and if you have ever had one, you know the pain. So I am feeling super thankful for today's sponsor, Tenassi. Tenassi's CBD CBDA is two times better than CBD alone and better than over-the-counter ibuprofen, acetaminophen, and aspirin. It helps soothe and relieve my aches and pains, like my pinched nerve, and it's great for sleep and anxiety, so I put it on right before bed. Tenassi was discovered by a team of chemists and biologists at Middle Tennessee State University, and 5% of all revenue is given back to the university partner for ongoing research. It is THC-free and comes in a range of products. I love the topicals, but you can also choose from soft gels, gummies, and tinctures. Satisfaction is guaranteed. Try Tenassi for 30 days, and if you don't love it, you get a full refund. Go to Tenassi.com and use code MOM to get 25% off at checkout. That's TANASI.com to get 25% off your first order with promo code MOM. Hi, welcome to the Sober Mom Life podcast. I'm your host, Suzanne, of My Kind of Sweet and the Sober Mom Life on Instagram. If you are a mama who has questioned your relationship with alcohol at times, if you're wondering if maybe it's making motherhood harder, this is for you. I will be having candid, honest, funny conversations with other moms who have also thought, maybe motherhood is better without alcohol. Is it possible? We'll chat and we'll talk about all things sobriety and how we've found freedom in sobriety. I don't consider myself an alcoholic. You don't have to either. And maybe life is brighter without alcohol. I hope you will join us on this journey, and I'm so excited to get started. Hello, welcome back to the podcast. Happy Monday. I hope you had a wonderful weekend. I sure did. I'm fresh off of a vacation at the beach and feeling so good. I'm excited for today's episode. I have Haley Conroy. Haley and I connected on Instagram. She's a bookstagrammer. Well, she's also a lawyer, but she's a bookstagrammer. And you know that bookstagrammers are near and dear to my heart because of my best friend, Katie. And I don't know if I even realized that Haley was sober, and it's funny because I had been following her, and then she reached out to me, and she heard a Real Sober Mom episode, and she was like, oh my God, I am sober. I'm not a fraud. And I love that because I totally understood. We assume sobriety is just, you know, for the rock bottom, Nicolas Cage in Leaving Las Vegas, Meg Ryan in When a Man Loves a Woman type. And it's not. Haley is sober, even though she hadn't been drunk in a decade, but she hated her relationship with alcohol. And she had the two glass habit that so many women and moms have. And we've been taught, like, yeah, just don't look at it. It's fine. Even the medical community will say, yeah, whatever. It wasn't fine for Haley. And only she knew that. Only she could say that. And yeah, she just shares her story so beautifully. Just a warning, there is some talk about loss. Her twins were born at 23 weeks, and she did experience some loss. So I just want to give a heads up to that in case anyone is going through fertility or is pregnant. Maybe, you know, listen with care. And I know that you will enjoy this episode. I absolutely adore Haley, and her honesty and vulnerability is going to help so many women. Hey, speaking of honesty and vulnerability, come and join us in the cafe. Or if you're not ready for all of the Zoom meetings and the support that the cafe provides, come and join us in the new Sober Mom Life community. So the cafe is $25 a month, but you get so much. You get your own chat, your feed. I think we're up to 8 Zoom meetings a week, book club, all of that, a chance to go on the retreat, merchandise discount, a chance to come on here and share your story in the Real Sober Mom chats. But if you are either maybe just sober curious, not quite there yet, or if you have some years under your belt and you don't need that constant support, come and join the community, because what you need is community. It's $5.95 a month. You get your own chat. You get your own feed. You do get access to the Tuesday meeting, the peer support meeting, and we just opened up book club to you too. And so community makes all the difference, I think, in sobriety. You need to be connected to women who understand you and who are going through the same thing you are. And that's what we have here, without judgment, without shame. We help you work through all of it. Come and join us. It's linked in the show notes, and enjoy this episode with Haley. Haley, welcome to the Sober Mom Life.
Thank you. I'm really excited to be here.
Okay. I feel like I am in such a safe space with you. You're a bookstagrammer on Instagram. And my best friend in the whole world is a librarian. She's also a bookstagrammer.
Katie?
Yes.
I listened to the episode.
Yes. Yeah. Katie. She's the mindful librarian on Instagram. And I love books. Like, it's my safe space. And so when I feel like we've been following each other for a while, right?
Yeah, we have. Yeah. It's like since I became sober and found you. So like 7 months.
Okay. And I don't even think I knew you were sober. I just started following. I was like, oh my God. Yeah. Bookstagram.
It's a book blogger.
Yes, yeah. For sure.
It's the best community. They're so nice. Right? They're just so kind and laid back.
Yeah. And so then when I saw you and I was like, oh my God, yes, Bookstagram, I love it. And your pretty pictures. And then, yeah, you were like, aww, yeah, I'm sober. And you said that your story was kind of like mine, right? In like not the rock bottom situation. So tell me.
No.
Yeah. Tell me that.
Yes. I was like a very much a rule follower, like a good Catholic schoolgirl. I made good grades. I wanted to play by the rules, do everything right. And I remember having a sleepover with my friend, and we were talking about how we could never be friends with somebody who drank alcohol because I was just so wrong. And like, we couldn't do that. And then a few months later, my parents sent me on a...
Wait, was it really just a few months? You're like, and then like was... 5 minutes later.
Yes, and they're like, oh.
Like, actually, this actually really does sound like a good idea. We had no idea what we were talking about 5 minutes ago.
It was exactly like that.
Yes.
So my parents sent me on a foreign exchange, like a student foreign exchange trip to Spain. Mm. And I never left the country. Like, we're, you know, normal middle class. And so it was like these 70 students from all over the world. And it was amazing. Like, we do Spanish classes in the morning. And then in the afternoons, we go on excursions around southern Spain. And we like see castles. And it was incredible.
Wait, but how old were you?
16.
Oh, that sounds amazing.
Yeah. But the thing about Spain is in the 90s, in the late 90s, the drinking age was 16.
Okay. How old are you now?
I'm 40.
Okay. You're 40. Okay. So I'm 43 and I went to France when I was 16 and it was the same thing. Yes. And we would like discotheque and like drink. Yes. Yes. Yes.
I still went in. I was like, no, I don't drink. That's wrong, for a few days. Yes. And then there for like 2 days.
Yeah.
And then the adults of the school, they like hosted fiestas every Friday night where there'd be an open bar. They'd have these barrels of sangria and they'd be like 16-year-olds, like, go ahead, do your thing. And I was like, all right, the grownups are saying like, It's cool. It's legal. I'm not breaking the rules, so it must be fine. So wow. I started drinking, and that was my first like binge drinking, my first hangover, like, and I remember writing in my diary, like I've sinned. I'll never do this again. That was wrong. And like the very next night I was just drinking again. Cause it was just fun.
Wait, how long were you there? How long were you in Spain?
Like a little over a month.
Okay. And you were kind of like, then you were just like all about it. You were like, yeah, I'm gonna. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
This is what you do. Like the Spanish just know what they're doing.
Yes.
Like, stupid Americans. Like, you said it at 21.
Yes. It's very confusing. Like when adults sign off on something. Right. Yes. And so like literally when you're 16, when you're little, you just think adults know what they're doing and like make right decisions all the time. And so if adults are signing off on something, it's very, yeah. Then it's like, okay, green light. Cool.
Yeah. So it was very confusing. I got back. And I was like, well, I'm just going to keep drinking. Like, I'm not going to quit. I kind of started hanging with a new group of friends that like to drink on the weekends and like to party. And we'd go, you know, we do the keg parties at people's houses or at people's ranches because this is Texas. So a lot of people had like, they'd have land and we'd go out to a field and everyone would be playing like, all the guys would be playing guitar and we'd be singing American Pie in a circle. And it was...
It's like exactly what you would think. It's like so on the nose. Yeah.
That led to some like serious, I don't know. Well, I didn't put together that probably led to my depression, but I started experiencing like some serious, serious depression around that time. And, you know, alcohol is a depressant. So I guess it's not too surprising. Teenage hormones and... I became really depressed. And so my parents put me on like antidepressants, anti-anxiety meds. I was taking those, but the weeks, it just got really dark like for years. And I had this double life where I would be so depressed most of the time during the week. And on the weekends, that's kind of when I first started using alcohol to treat my emotions. I would pretend to be fun, Haley, happy Haley, and escape that darkness. And like, it was the only time I could like not feel that overwhelming depression. So I totally had this whole double life thing going for a while.
And did your parents like know about the drinking or was it just kind of like par for the course? Like that's kind of what high school kids do.
They kind of knew. So what I had always grown up with too for my parents was I'm Irish. My grandfather was an alcoholic. It was sort of like the genetic curse. I felt my parents were always like, you know, your grandfather was an alcoholic. You gotta be careful. You can't drink too much. Like,
right.
There's this sort of like genetic boogeyman on my shoulder. Like, it's always there. It may come out. Have to watch it.
Which is very confusing, right? Like, right. You're like, okay, don't drink too much. But what is that, right? Like, I don't know.
Right.
Like,
drink responsibly.
Right. Like, drink this really like dangerous thing. Respond. Which we know so much more than they did in the 90s. And so that's really scary and yeah, confusing.
It got really, yeah. So my teens were like a really dark time. I didn't come out of that until like my 20s. And I just got things back on track. I went to the community college. I got my grades up. I went back to like the perfect grade A perfectionist mentality. And
how do you think that you like came out of it? Like, do you, looking back, do you see what happened or?
You know, it's funny because I did quit drinking for a while.
Really?
When I was 20, yeah. I got on a good antidepressant and anti-anxiety med that worked for a while, Celexin, Wellbutrin. Yeah. I mean, when I think about it, I did kind of quit drinking for a while and I was just working a lot, made at restaurants, made a new group of friends, started going to the community college, but I had like totally torched my life before that and started going to the community college. And I told my mom, I was like, I think I want to go to like UT Austin, which is like, you got to be in the top 10% of your high school to get in. I was like, I'm going to go there. And then I want to like go to law school. And my mom's like, let's just like calm down a little, maybe just stay at the community college and figure it out. I was like, no, I'm going to do it.
I'm so interested in this. When you said you torched your life, like, what does that look like?
Like, I just barely graduated from high school. Like, just like, I was so depressed, I could barely get out of bed. Like, it was serious clinical depression. Yeah.
Okay. And so it was then bad. Kind of everything just fell off. And then do you think, like, right, you wanting to go to UT Austin was like, okay, I need to get out of this place. Like, I want to strive for something bigger, better. Was it that?
I think it was just, like I said, being on the right, like, sort of combo of antidepressant, anti-anxiety, maybe cutting the drinking out, and just being like, you know what, I know I can do this, and just having that confidence and working my way out. It took a while. But yeah, I did. I got into UT.
Wow.
It was great. Like, in my teens, drinking was to escape depression. In my 20s, it was so much fun. Like, I wasn't depressed anymore. I was in this good space. I was making great grades. I was happy. I had my group of friends. We go out to the bars. And I don't know if you know this about Austin, but it's like a big drinking town. And I know you're going to laugh because everybody comes on here and says, you don't know this about my city, but it's a big drinking
town.
You're
like, no, but Austin, I'm telling you, it drinks more than, and I hate to tell you this. You guys, I think we're all the drinking towns. Like, we are the drinking, I mean, world. So Austin.
So yeah, Austin. So I don't know if you've heard of Sixth Street, but it's basically this long one-way street. They close it down every Friday and Saturday night.
Oh,
just
wow.
Lined with bars, and drunken co-eds just stumble around between bars. And I don't know, maybe they did it that way so that they didn't get hit by cars. But then there's bars all surrounding that, like 5th Street, 4th Street, 1st Street. It's just this huge scene of all these bars and live music. And so my friends and I, we would go to the bars. Like, I had a friend who worked at this one bar and would hook us up with the free shots early in the night. So we drink, and then we bar hop, and then I'd do my great dancing moves out on the dance floor.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Oh, I've had those too.
I don't think I was very good.
No, when you're like, I'm the best dancer in the entire world right now.
Yeah.
Yes, I know.
But it was fun, and like, I probably overdrank some of the time. Like, I didn't drink and drive. We'd have someone who would be the driver. And it wasn't a nightly thing. It wasn't all week long. It didn't take up space in my head. I didn't think about it, really. It was a social thing. So then I started applying to law schools, and I went to go and tour the law schools that I got accepted at. And I went to this one. It was a great law school. And I was touring, and the guy was telling me, like, yeah, you know, we do law school softball, where you get pitchers of beer and you drink before the game, and then you go out and play and then you drink pitchers afterwards. And then you do a Friday happy hour in the law school atrium where everybody's drinking.
Oh yeah. My God, that's funny. Okay, so then you heard this and you were like, well, obviously,
I'm
sign
like,
me.
I'm
up.
All in.
Yeah, this sounds amazing.
So I'm in Illinois and I'm like, yes. Like, I thought law school was awful and hard and grueling, but this sounds fun. It's like work hard, play hard. Like, this is my thing. So what's funny about that too is, so after, you know, after I read Quit Like a Woman and decided to get sober, this is fast forwarding for a second, but I listened to the Huberman Lab podcast,
yeah,
the 2022 alcohol podcast.
Yes, August.
I'm obsessed.
Is it like
with
August 18th or something?
Yes.
We'll link it. Yeah, yeah.
Everyone needs to listen to that episode.
Yeah.
So he talks about how people who are like genetically predisposed towards like alcohol use disorder, they have a genetic variant, when they drink like past 3-4 drinks or so, that they will start to get amped up and excited and energized and like go, 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 rah, 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 2 a.m. Whereas the people who are like the take it or leave it drinkers,
yeah,
like the normies,
which
will just
are
when
rare,
they hit 3 or 4.
Because that is not,
yes,
that is not normal.
Yes.
That is, we call those like rare unicorns. Yeah.
Yeah. So like the normies drinking who don't have this like genetic predisposition or whatever will just get tired once they hit 3 to 4 drinks and they're like over it. They're feeling the come down and they're just like, they're on the downward slope.
Mm-hmm.
But it just made me laugh so hard when I heard that, because like that was my drinking. I was like dancing at the bar till closing, rah, rah, rah.
Yeah, like, you were like, I could keep,
you know,
going.
Singing. Yes. It was fun. And honestly, like when I look back at those law school and those drinking in my 20s, like It was fun and it was social and it was occasional once or twice a week and, you know, maybe a little bit bingy, like 3 to 4 drinks early in the night, and then I drink a ton of water and eat and be okay. But I didn't think about it. Like, it didn't take up space during the week. It wasn't something I thought about. It was just like, you're socializing. This is what you do.
Totally. That so sounds like my college.
Mm-hmm. So that was my law school experience. And then I got married near the end of law school. My husband and I moved to North Carolina for his job. And I had always been this person who had like 5-year plans. Like, ever since I went through that really dark depression period, I was like, I am going to hit this goal, this goal, this goal. And so my 5-year plan at that time was like, graduate law school at 27, check, like get married at 27, check. And my next thing was, okay, I'm getting close to 30. I need to have my first kid. Like, I need to have a baby.
Okay. Yes. That was like on the list. Do you watch Bravo at all?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Good. You do, right? Because you always comment on the things, right? Okay. It reminds me of Lindsay from Summer House. You know, like, remember when she had her list and she's like, yes. Like, this, I will exactly. have this. Yes. Like, mm-hmm. like it, yes, makes so much sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not a list person like that anymore.
Okay.
But
okay.
I was.
Yeah. No, I get it.
I was. So this is why I don't do plans anymore like this. So I was like, I'm going to do the baby at 30. That's what I'm doing. And I got pregnant. I was like, we're right on schedule. All right, we're good. I found out I was pregnant with boy-girl twins. And I was like, this is working perfectly in my 5-year plan. I'll have my 2 babies. Like, I'll, you know, be done, take 1 maternity leave. I only ever wanted a boy and a girl. And then at 23 weeks, I gave birth to my twins.
Mm.
Yeah. So they don't know exactly what happened. They're like, twins are high risk. Sometimes this just happens. I didn't have any like pre-existing conditions. I remember like they were trying to stop the labor and they couldn't. And my son came naturally, silent. My daughter came C-section. I remember the doctor like coming around the curtain being like, do you want to revive your twins? And I just looked at my husband and we were just both like, yes, like do it. And we had no idea like what we were getting into. My son lived for 3 days. Mm-hmm. Connor, he passed after 3 days. And then my daughter fought to live for 9 months in the NICU.
I'm so sorry.
Thank you. Yeah. It was just a waking nightmare. I had no conceptualization of what that was like having a micro preemie. Like, micro preemie is under 26 weeks or under 2 pounds. And it's like less than 1% of babies are born that early. And I mean, she was a fetus on a ventilator, nonstop alarms, heart rate, oxygen all the time, blood transfusions, surgeries, septic infections. It was like day to day, we did not know if she would live. And I felt a lot of guilt too about saying that I wanted to revive her because, you know, they told us they had about a 30% chance of survival. And I felt a lot of guilt because I was like, was this selfish of me to make her live when she just like wasn't even meant for this world? You know, like I just condemned her to suffer for months and she's just not even going to make it.
Oh, I know there's like nothing I can say, you know, to like, I feel like, just hearing your story, first of all, like what you've been through, I'm just so incredibly sorry, and the heartbreak, you know?
Yeah.
It feels to me like hearing that, like that was your first decision as a mom. And like, I can't imagine as a mom not making that decision.
Do you want to revive your baby?
Like, there's no other answer, right?
Yeah.
Like, of course, that's in you. Like, that's just, yeah. So,
yes.
Oh,
And like, they're just really, there wasn't even time to like mourn my son really. Cause it was just like this daily battle of, we get called in the middle of the night sometimes, like to come to the hospital because they didn't know if she'd make it till tomorrow. And just every day was just this daily fight for life. I mean, for months. You know, I remember when she was like 4.5 months old or so, and I didn't hold her. I couldn't hold her for the first 2 months because she was so medically fragile. So when she was 4.5 months, her breathing finally was like getting close to stabilizing. The doctors were finally being like, we think she's going to make it. We just need to get her stable enough. And that took another 4.5 months. I remember looking at her and just telling my husband, like, I don't care what she wants to do in life. I don't care if she goes to college, doesn't go to college. She wants to be a hairdresser, like whatever. I just want her to live, to come home and to be happy. Mm-hmm. That's all I want, mm-hmm. is for her to be happy. And so like, I kind of just remember resolving that and feeling like it was going to happen. I also told her she had a timeline. She needed to come home by my 30th birthday.
Oh, yeah. Like,
yeah. And I promised her we'd take her to Disney World if she ever came home, and, you know, all of these things. So as you can imagine, like day to day was just trauma. Mm-hmm. And I'd go home, and this, like, sometime during this time is when I would go home and start my like nightly drinking. Like, I'd start my 2 glasses of wine, and, you know, I didn't drink much, but it eventually just became every single night to kind of numb out or escape or self-medicate, not feel like this horror, yeah. that I was like, was my life with, you know. So she finally did come home at 9 months old. She came home on my 30th birthday. So she came home, she's like this little miracle. She was 1 pound, 7 ounces when she was born. She came home. She was still very tiny, but she was on oxygen for 13 months. She was on an NG feeding tube, like kind of attached to her face that went down her nose, for 18 months. She had all kinds of like a formula pump, diuretics, all kinds of medications. She didn't walk till she was 2.5, didn't speak till she was 3. So when she came home, the doctors told me if she gets sick at any point within her first 3 years of life, she's going to end up back in the hospital because her lungs are so damaged.
Oh,
I was like, whoa.
That's, yeah.
No preschool, like no daycare, no, like we're not doing any of that. I'm not going to like send my kid out and go to work and be like, good luck, you're going to go to the hospital.
But yeah, because that's all they do in the first 3 years is get sick. Yeah, yeah.
So she was literally in a bubble. Like, I would put her oxygen tank under the stroller and we'd go out in public, and even if it was 90 degrees and sunny, I would have a plastic, like those clear weather shields for rain. I'd have it around her so nobody could breathe on her. She was like literally a bubble girl for several years. And she got all the therapies at home, occupational therapy, speech therapy, physical therapy, feeding therapy, all the things. And I worked with her all the time, trying to eat by mouth, trying to do all these things. She's 11 now, but she still gets different services through school and therapies. So, you know, she still has some special needs, but, yeah. And we decided at some point to like have another baby, and we like didn't know for sure whether I could even carry another baby to term, but, I did. And I had my son Parker, who was born full term, 39 and a half weeks, giant 9 pound, 4 ounce baby.
Yeah. Like,
the total reverse.
Yeah.
He was just this wild, loud, intense, like over the top kid. So yeah, when he was a baby toddler, I think that's when I really sort of settled into my like religiously 2 drinks a night. I'm all in on this mommy wine culture. We drink wine to cope, like life is stressful, mom life is stressful. And like, this is what we do. And I had the coasters, I had the tea towels, I had the coffee mug, there may be wine in here. I had like all the crap.
Yes.
I was like hook, line, and sinker. I was in. I remember like there being this really clarifying moment, maybe around 2016, where like I buy this crap as gifts for people. And I remember I got my friend a coffee tumbler that said, there may be booze in here. And then the next week I went over to her house and she was like, oh, I love the tumbler. I'm like, I got my coffee and then I'm like putting some Baileys in it in the morning, you know, as I drive the kids to school to take it with me, you know, dropping the kids off at drop off. And I was like, oh. I was like, whoa, 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 whoa. I thought that was a joke. Like,
yeah,
like even I know they call it wine o'clock because it's like 5 o'clock. Like I know when that is, like we don't start till then.
And like driving and drinking and right. Yes. And so, but that's what it does, right?
It gives you permission. Like this mommy wine culture crap gives people permission to have this problematic drinking.
Yes.
Habit. Because while other people are like, oh, it's funny. Then some people are like, no, this is fine. Because all the crap, mommy wine culture crap says it's fine.
Right. And it's not only fine, it's like encouraged. It's like, no. This is obviously essential and we're going to encourage it. And it separates this like, I mean, horribly addictive, dangerous drug from reality. It's like, no, this isn't that. Like, this isn't a brown paper bag. This is a tumbler, you guys. Like, this is, it's cute and it's funny and there's nothing to see, right? And you, like, not knowing too, right? Like, you're just like, oh, isn't this, like, cute and cheeky and kind of irreverent? And then she's like, no, this is actually, like, a permission slip.
Yes.
And both of you are not, you can just so see, none of it's malicious.
Yeah. Like I had my permission slip. I would have on my 1 o'clock tea towels and stuff. And I'd be like, yeah, it's 1 o'clock. It's 5 o'clock.
Yeah.
It's like, you just got the time wrong. We don't try to do that.
Right. You're like, wait. Well, no, it's cool at 5. But like, yeah.
Like you don't have to drive that and you're home.
Right.
But yeah, so that was the first time I really stopped and went, huh. That was probably about 2016. And then I had my twins. I had twins again, just spontaneously. And like, who does? Yeah.
Really?
And they came full term. It was terrifying because they told me the first ones came early because they were twins. But they were full term.
So you had twins again. Oh my God, really?
Yes.
And just naturally, oh wow. And that had to be terrifying.
It was terrifying.
Oh.
Yeah. And that's when like, my whole living in the moment, day to day, like we're not going to plan far out. We're not going to think about that. We're just going to go with what's in front of us. So I definitely did that. And, you know, and then they were born and suddenly I had 4 under 5.
Oh my God.
And I like be going through Target with my double stroller of the infants and like 2 toddlers in tow. And people would stop and be like, gosh, how do you do that? Or like, it's the South. So they'd be like, bless your heart.
Right. Oh my God. Yes. Bless your heart. Yes. Or like, wow, do you have your hands full? And you're like, thanks.
Yes. Yeah, like, do you have your hands full? That was another one. Yeah. How'd you do that? I'm like, well, my nightly wine. Like I didn't say that, but.
Right. I think your story highlights so much like the why, like you can just so, I can so understand, right? Like when you're going through that like traumatic thing with your twins and then like, it's just so much to feel and to like cope with. And like, of course, like the wine makes so much sense and it comes in really handy because like,
right.
If you feel like you don't even have the capacity, like you couldn't, there's just not time, right? And there's just not, when there's not time to like feel and even figure out how you feel, not even to mention what you need, like you're like, you think I have the luxury of feeling what I feel and then figuring out what I need? Mm-hmm. Like, do you know how much?
No.
That's a luxury, right?
Yeah.
And like, why?
I was treading water.
Yes.
Yeah.
You're just trying to survive. Mm-hmm. And so I hope that you can have such compassion for yourself in that, like, where you're turning to wine. Because when everyone's telling you that that's the answer, of course. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just, of course. Right?
Yeah. And it's heart healthy, Suzanne.
Right. That French study in the 70s, you guys.
The science that said it was heart healthy. More on that later.
Yeah.
So I would say when it really started to be like, when I entered the moderation mental gymnastics championship.
Yeah.
And I was going to win.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, I'm going to win. I'm going to slay.
Yes. This is like the sweet spot for me to talk about because like it's, I can feel it. The shame that comes and the mental gymnastics and like the exhaustion of it.
The wine glass measuring cup.
Yes.
Because I was going to drink responsibly, keep it at 2 drinks. And I did, but I knew that doing it every single night, I didn't like having to need it. I wanted to want it.
Right.
Like I would go to pick my kids up from school and I would be so excited because I'd be like, yes, it's 4 o'clock. It's only 1 more hour till 1 o'clock. Yes. Like I get to drink and unwind from all this stress. This is great. It's almost here. And I just found myself looking forward to it, thinking about it. I was like, okay, this isn't good. So we're going to do the moderation.
Yeah.
So then I was like, all right, we're only going to drink with days of the week that start with the letter T. Yeah. Oh, that didn't work. Let's try like weekends. Nope. And I was like, well, maybe just weekends, maybe every other day. I kept trying, kept trying, and it failed over and over again. And when you fail, then I get in this negative self-talk, like, what's wrong with me? Why can't I do that? Why did I fail?
And it fails. I just want to point out, it fails because it's highly addictive, right? It's just literally science, yes. Right? And moderating a highly addictive substance, it's really fucking hard. And it takes constant willpower.
Yes. I was white knuckling the 2 drinks a night. I'm like, because I know the natural progression is you drink more and more and more as your tolerance goes up. And that's what I always hear in like sober stories. But like, I was like holding on tight to that 2 drinks a night. And what would happen is I would hit my tolerance. I'd hit it and I'd be like, well, I don't feel anything. I'm like, that sucks, but we'll try again tomorrow. Maybe I'll switch it up and do red wine instead of white wine, or like White Claw instead of red wine.
Yes.
We'll just try again, do better tomorrow and get that buzz.
Right.
That sort of release valve that I need.
It's like, you know that meme where it's like the woman like looking and it's all the equations, you know, and it's like all that, you know, it's that where you're like, surely there has to be a way. The answer is not that I'm addicted to an addictive substance, but there's gotta be a way. Like, and when you said like, I didn't want to need it, I just wanted to want it. And that's so how it is with any addictive substance. You do it when you want it. And then turns out then you need it. And the thing about alcohol, it's like no one would look at you, I'm guessing, at this time in your life and be like, oh, well,
Haley's
addicted to alcohol, right? And you wouldn't be like, well, I'm addicted to alcohol.
I hadn't been drunk in a decade.
Right.
How are you going to be like, she's a drunk. She needs to go and call herself an alcoholic and go to AA. Like,
right. How? You're like, that's not, no. But there's such a difference, right? Because you were addicted to alcohol. Like that's just, that's anyone who's continually drinking.
I thought about it all the time during the day. It took up a lot of mental space.
Yes.
Right.
And even though you were moderating successfully, like what toll did that take on you? Right.
Yeah. The negative self-talk, the failing at moderation, all the times I'd swear it off. I'd be like, that's the last bottle. And then I'd end up right back in the Target aisle, just going through the Target aisle. And I'd look and be like, the wine aisle, and I'd be like, I don't really have a problem. Like, it's just 2 drinks and it's not that bad, and everybody does it. So I'll just put the wine in my cart. And then it was just this rinse and repeat, like, this, I don't want, like, I knew something was wrong. I had this nagging feeling. It wasn't like my law school days where, or like my college days where it was just like fun on the weekends, socially, occasionally. It was like, I had to have it.
Right.
And it took up too much space.
And that you could stop at 2. Like this, I think, is very important. Like you said, you hadn't been drunk in 10 years. Like this wasn't.
Right.
You guys, this isn't like what we've been taught. Like don't look at this until you're here or whatever, whatever the finish line is to this, right? You just got to the point when you were like, oh, wait, I'm looking forward to this too much. And I'm struggling to go, you know, a length of time without it. Oh, okay. What does that mean?
Yes.
Like what did that point come? When did that come for you that you were like, huh?
So the thing about the 2 drinks too, let me tell you this. I landed on two drinks because I'm a rule follower, and I looked up the US dietary guidelines, and it was one drink for a woman, two drinks for a man. And I was like, that's just sexism. Like, that's just the patriarchy trying to hold us back. I can't think of any good reason that men would get two drinks and women only get one. What is this garbage?
This is amazing. You're like, I'm a feminist. You think I'm going to follow this? No, no, no.
For women's rights equality.
Yes.
And I learned later that it's actually science because women have more fat, which holds alcohol, and less water, which dilutes alcohol, and then less metabolic enzyme, which processes the alcohol. Mm-hmm. So there's like a faster slide into alcohol use disorder and liver disease and heart disease and all these other things. So it's actually science, but I thought it was just a patriarchy.
Yes, which is such a great example of, like, I mean, that is the addicted brain, even though you weren't, when I say addicted, you weren't like, it wasn't that, but it is something that you're like trying to protect, to be like, no, obviously.
Don't touch this.
Yes.
And who would come and say, oh, you at your two drinks a night?
Yeah, no one, right? Even for a doctor, like, even if you told a doctor, they would be like, oh yeah, nothing to see.
Yeah, like, whatever. You know, 1 to 2 drinks a night, that's moderate. My doctors were like, meh.
And like, well, is it affecting anything? Like, you're like, no, I still can do all the things I need to do. Right. Yeah. And then inside,
it was screaming.
Yes.
It was like, no, 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 no. Yes. So it finally came a time. Okay. I forgot. I left this part out. My husband is a PhD in neurobiology, and he literally did his dissertation on this, on the effects of alcohol, like ethanol, on the reward system and neurotransmitters in the brain.
What?
So literally he had a PhD in this. He has a PhD in this.
Wait, so does he drink?
No. And I was like, were you studying me all those years?
Oh my God.
No, he doesn't drink. And he used to in college, but he told me recently, he was like, Haley, alcohol is such a dirty drug. Like, it gets into every system in the body. It affects cells everywhere. Like, I saw that. I didn't want to do it anymore. And so, like, he'd have a beer here or there, but he hasn't drank in at all in 6 years.
Wow. Okay. So you were living with the expert.
Yes. And he would send me articles regularly about what was happening. I'd be like, but I found on Google this, like, study from the 90s saying that it was heart healthy and, like, people live slightly longer and there's this J curve. So I'm pretty sure I'm fine. Okay, cool. Bye.
Right. Oh my God.
Yes.
You just weren't ready, right?
I was not ready. And then when I started to get ready, it was in 2023. He sent me the article that was from when the WHO came out and said, no amount of alcohol is safe.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, well, then what were y'all saying all those years about how it was heart healthy?
You're like, why didn't anybody tell me this? And he's like, I have been trying to.
Yeah. And John's like, I've been sending you the studies. It's like, but you're not the WHO. Right. Like,
but you're my husband. What do you know?
I think you are. Yeah. You have a PhD in this. What do you know?
Yeah, what do you know? God. Oh, well, that's hilarious. So yes. Then did you stop then, or was it just a building? Okay.
No,
it was
that
just
was the buildup. So I saw that and I was like, well, okay. And I, well, but it's the WHO. The US dietary guidelines are still saying 1 to 2 drinks. And so I'm going to go, like, I'm just going to keep going with this. What's funny is also around that time, the Canadian guidelines came out. Their limit went from 15 drinks a week for men, 10 for women, down to 2 drinks max per week. Because they actually followed the science that the WHO was following.
Yes, imagine that.
And I was like, yeah, scientists following.
You're like, but we don't live in Canada.
Yeah, we're not Canadians. I'm an American. I can handle my 2 drinks a night. So yeah, I kept drinking like this, but I was thinking about it, more rules, more moderation, more failing at those rules. But things finally came to a head in June. My uncle passed away this past June, my dad was there, and I just remember my cousin calling me sobbing because it was her dad and we're really close, and it was really hard. And what I didn't mention before, but I had a few days a year, maybe like 2, that were, I call the F it days, where just like, F it, I'm not going to keep track. Like, we're at a family party. I'm not going to keep track. And I still would never get drunk, but maybe instead of two, it was like 3 to 4.
Mm-hmm.
And I also did that on the anniversary every year of my son's death. Mm-hmm. I was like, this is too hard. Like, F it. I'm going to just drink what I want. So I had an F it day when my uncle passed. And that turned into an F it 2 days because I got one of those big 1.5 liter bottles of wine. And I remember my husband looking in the fridge and looking at me and going, did you just drink 2 bottles of wine over 2 days? I was like, no, that's 1.5 liters. It's only 1.5 bottles of wine. That's not true. I Googled it later. It's two.
Yeah.
So when I realized that, I was like, ooh, okay. That was not good. I was like, let's get the train back on the tracks. I went back to my 2 drinks a night. But I was like, you know what? Like, we need to take a look at this. And like in the past, whenever I have a problem or something that's bothering me, you know, I read like 100 books a year. So I like read my way out of things. So I've read books on parenting and anxiety and, you know, self-help, all the Brené Brown and Glennon Doyle. And I was always like, I remember always thinking when they got to the part about their sobriety, I was like, that's so sad for them. That sounds so boring.
Yes.
Now. Like, ugh.
I did too. Yeah,
that's not me. I don't have that problem. Like, I'm good.
Right. I remember Brené Brown being like, sobriety is my superpower. And I would be like, oh, it's so sad that she has to tell herself that so that she feels good about it. And now I'm like, wait, Brené Brown was right? Who knew?
I know. We weren't ready to hear it.
Mm-hmm.
So I went and I checked out a book from the library immediately, Drink by Indalsa. That was amazing. And that like kind of got me started and I started thinking about it. But I was like, still, like, I don't drink like her. She was getting drunk.
Yeah.
And, like, she's super successful, but like I could still draw that line of like, that's
this
not
isn't me. Yeah.
Yeah. And then I got off the hold wait list. There's always a hold for this book, for Quit Like a Woman. And I started listening to that book. Oh my gosh, that book blew my world. It just blew up all my faulty perceptions, this whole notion that it's black and white. You're either like us normies on one side or the alcoholics on the other. And if you're not one, you're the other. And there's nothing in between. And I was listening to that and I was so angry. I was so freaking angry because that, you know, what she was talking about with the science and how it causes cancer, how it messes with your sleep and your stress levels and just messes with everything. And I was angry about that, but I was still like, okay, those are kind of all still maybe someday problems. But then I got to the part where she talked about the burst blood vessels around your nose, like the burst capillaries around your nose from drinking.
Yeah.
And I was like, shut the front door. Like, I have that right now. I was like, from 2 drinks a night? Yeah, I was, you know, when they present the science, they always make it sound like if you're an alcoholic and you're getting drunk all the time and you're, you know, but like moderate drinking, the drinking within, you know, ish guidelines, not even getting drunk, you have these problems. And I had no idea.
Right. If you're not drinking to get drunk, you know, if you can't exactly tie your like bad sleep to alcohol or anxiety, if there's not this straight line, it can be hard to make the correlation, right? And so an actual like physical symptom that you can
see.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, like, this isn't a hypothetical cancer chance.
Like, I can't see my liver,
right?
Like, I can't,
right.
I don't know my liver enzymes. Like, I don't get those tested, right? And so, like, it's easy just to be like, yeah, okay, fine. Mm-hmm. But yes, where you can actually see.
Yes. And if that, then what else?
Mm.
That was where I went.
Yes.
And so then, you know, as angry as alcohol industry tricked us, our government, the society isn't protecting us.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was furious. I was finishing the book, getting near the end, and I went to my mom's house in Austin. We were visiting there and she was having a family party and she got out the good champagne. And I'm like starting to think, I don't know if I want to drink anymore. I think I might really be done. even though I've sworn it off a million times before. Mm-hmm. So she brings out the good stuff and it's pink and sparkly and she's refilling our glasses and I'm drinking it. And my son looks and goes, Gammy, who's 9, he looks at her and goes, Gammy, can I have some? And in my head, it was like this, like line down the middle of my life. And in my head, I just screamed like, no, no. Like that was also, he had asked about that several times, seeing me drink at home. Like he'd seen me be stressed. He'd seen me pour a glass or two of wine and relax and be happy, friendly mommy. And so he was saying that and it just all kind of like clicked together. Like, no, I do not want to bottle this for my kid anymore.
Yeah.
So, and then I looked down at my full glass and was like, well, I can't waste the good stuff. So I had to finish the glass, but
yeah, makes sense. Yeah.
But I finished it and I was like, after this, like, John, this is it. I'm never drinking again after this. And I was like, okay, whatever. Like, yeah, you've said that before. Sure. We'll see. Yeah, we'll see. But I mean, I finished that book and I was so enraged.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that was it. I was done. And, you know, since then I've like done these deep dives, you know, I went on to deep dive down the sober Instagram rabbit hole. And like, I took that red pill and just went all in.
Isn't it crazy? Like, you're like, oh my God, I had no idea this world exists. And there's so much. Like, it's like once you're plugged in, then it's like, oh, holy shit, the blinders come off.
No idea.
Yes.
Yeah. And like, I was before, like I said, all the information that I learned and I kept Googling articles and I like actually started reading the science my husband had been sending me for years.
Yes.
And I was like, holy smokes, does nobody know this? And even at the low levels, like if you listen to the Huberman Lab podcast, he talks about all these risk factors and it's not binge drinking. It's 1 to 2 drinks a night, just regular drinking that it creates all this risk. But yeah, what I noticed after a few weeks is that wow, suddenly it wasn't just the redness around my nose that disappeared. It was the insomnia I had been dealing with for years, where I'd wake up at 2 in the morning and I'd be anxious. I'd be awake for like 2 hours. I couldn't fall back asleep. And then I'd finally fall back asleep, but I'd be exhausted all the next day and chugging coffee. Then I need to come down. So I drink the wine to come down.
Yep.
I had no idea that alcohol, even 1 to 2 glasses a night, disrupts REM sleep.
And how tired we are as women and moms.
Yes,
like we're so tired, we need sleep. Yes. And the sleep that we do get is shit if we're drinking alcohol.
Yes. And not even hungover. Just
right.
Like even 1 to 2 glasses. And your sleep quality is just worse because you're not getting into that good deep REM and you're just more tired. Even if you don't wake up, you can just not like feel more, you can just feel exhausted when you wake up in the morning. So that I immediately noticed. And then the second thing I noticed is my anxiety went way down. And I thought that alcohol was making my anxiety, was treating my anxiety. That's what I drank it every night because I was so stressed out.
Yeah.
I had no idea that it was actually causing my like baseline cortisol to go up round the clock, even when I wasn't drinking.
And like drops in your serotonin, dopamine, all the good
yes.
stuff. Yes. Even when you weren't drinking. Yes.
Yeah. Even when you're not drinking, that if you're habitually drinking like 7 drinks or more a week, your baseline cortisol is just higher and you're just feeling more anxiety on a daily basis because of the alcohol. Like the alcohol makes you feel calm and, you know, nice for a little while. It calms that anxiety for, you know, while you're drinking it, but then it does the opposite.
Yes.
I had no idea. And I'm just still so angry that nobody told me anything.
Yes. Except your husband.
My husband,
yeah, except he doesn't
know what he was talking about. There was this study. I have it also, all this stuff in my highlights on my Instagram profile. I have like all the articles and things I found and Quitlet.
Oh, good. Okay. I'm going there.
Save
okay.
to highlights.
We're all going to Haley's highlights.
Yeah. There was a study this summer where they came out and said since when they looked at 2018 to 2020, women's death rate, annual death rate from alcohol is increasing 15% each year, like even taking out the pandemic year that is going up by 15%, whereas men were only about 12% going up. And when you look at the timelines before that, like 1997 to 2007, it was only increasing 1%. 2007 to 2018, it was increasing about 4%. And now it's 15% annual death rate from alcohol for women. Ugh. So, I mean, that was that alcohol industry coming in and being like, we got to change our demographic. We got to market to the women because we tapped out the men.
Yeah, because the men are already like dying from alcohol. So like, yeah, we got it. We need more consumers, guys.
Saturated that market.
Yes.
It makes me so mad.
I know.
So, and there's this other great article I just have to throw in.
Yeah.
It's this article in Slate, and it basically talks about debunking the whole heart healthy, all of those studies, all the studies saying that alcohol makes you live longer. They basically went back and looked at all those studies that showed moderate drinkers to like live longer or have less heart disease. And they found that when they removed the sick quitters, like people who had quit because they had been alcoholics previously or had some sort of medical condition, that benefit went away.
Yes.
And now like literally everybody, the American Cancer Society, World Heart Federation, WHO, every scientist or doctor is like, any amount of alcohol is bad for your cancer, for your heart.
That whole J curve, yes, it completely disappears because they're looking at the people who were very heavy drinkers and were forced to quit alcohol. That's who is in the study. Yes.
Yeah. They didn't take them out.
No, I know.
But that's why a lot of us still hold on to that heart healthy.
And that French alcohol paradox study from like literally the 70s that he came out and said like, no, this actually, that's been debunked for decades.
It talks about that.
Yes.
Yeah. Because they had a Mediterranean lifestyle and they weren't accounting for lifestyle.
Bananas. Haley, I'm just so thankful that you came on here. Thank you. Tell everybody where we can find you. I'm going to link everything in the show notes.
You can find me at H. Conroy Books. And I like to share stuff about all of the firsts in my sobriety and my stories. And I have a whole highlight with all of that and all the articles and nerdy stuff I like to.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of The Sober Mom Life. If you loved it, please rate and review it wherever you listen. 5 stars is amazing. Also, follow me on Instagram at The Sober Mom Life. Okay, I'll see you next week. I'm going to go reheat my coffee. Bye.
It's easy to blame ourselves for our struggles with alcohol. We see people around us being able to control their drinking without any consequences, yet no matter what we try, we can't seem to figure it out for ourselves. My name is Jillian Teets, and I am the host of the Sober Powered Podcast, where I use my biochemistry background to explain the latest research in addiction and help you understand both why you drink the way you do and how to develop the skills and mindset you need to find freedom from alcohol. I discuss topics like why we think about our drinking 24/7, why we have no off switch, and why we crave alcohol. If you're struggling with your drinking or you know someone who is, then I hope that you will check out the Sober Powered Podcast. New episodes every Friday. See you there.